As most of you know, Ted had an iconic radio sports broadcasting career that spanned about 34 years, mostly in Montreal. He was a pioneer in his field. He was an innovator, a unique showman on the air, and he was a throwback to the old days of radio that served as an inspiration for many young minds to go on into a future in broadcasting. I was one of them. Ted's arguably right up there with the greats like Danny Gallivan, Dick Irvin, as the most influential voices in Canadian sports broadcasting, especially with the lexicon that he bequeathed upon the generation that grew up listening to him. He coined many catchphrases that became regular routines among all of his listeners. He talked about living the game of life, going to the school of hard knocks, walking on Savvy Street, and the importance of being a straight arrow. He was renowned for having a cast of characters on his radio show, and I was one of them. I called his sports prep program for the first time in his first year in 1972 as a shy 15-year-old, and I still remember the butterflies that I had in my stomach, the pounding in my chest when his producer Dan McGarrity told me that I was up next. I feared Ted's trademark machine gun, but somehow managed to impress him enough that he asked me my name. When I replied Earl, he said, "Earl the Pearl?" And I said, "Yeah, I guess so." And the rest, as they say, is history. That began a unique four-decade relationship that I had with Ted. In those days, I traveled a lot and called Ted's show Collect from everywhere in the world. And he always accepted the call. I called him from phone booths in Dodger Stadium, Yankee Stadium, Candlestick Park in San Francisco, Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia, Pacific Coliseum in Vancouver. I even phoned Ted when I was overseas with the McGill Redmen hockey team in Switzerland one day. And that story went on for years on his show. He always asked me to tell that one. But the call that he seemed to enjoy the most was when I somehow convinced John Ferguson to call from the Winnipeg Jets dressing room in February of 1977. Fergie was a friend of Ted's. He met him through racetracks here in the city, and they became quite tight. And Ted loved that story so much that every time I called him after that show, he always asked me to repeat the John Ferguson story. Well, fast forward 2 decades later, after the night of January 30th, 1996, I called Ted's show that night to discuss the birthplace of hockey, which, as we all know, is McGill University in Montreal. And Ted wanted me to tell the John Ferguson story instead. And I declined. I said, "Ted, I've told this story dozens of times on your show. And I want to talk about something else." And I decided that I wasn't going to let Ted get me off topic, which is something that he excelled at with all of his callers. Anyway, I declined to tell the story. Ted cut me off, suspended me from calling his program for 2 years, less a day. I was stunned because I'd been phoning Ted for decades. So after sitting out about a month of my sentence, I tried to call his show. I didn't hide my name. I told McGarrity that it was me. And he said, "Earl, you know I can't put you on until your suspension comes up." Well, that was I was a bit crushed, to tell you the truth. I couldn't believe it, that they were that serious on a sports talk show. Nevertheless, I served out my full 2 year suspension, less a day, and called back Ted on September 30th, 1998. He welcomed me back with open arms, but on the condition that I agreed to retell the John Ferguson story. I sighed, and I agreed, and I gave him the extended play version, one which lasted about 28 minutes, and it went well past the 11 o'clock news. That anecdote taught me many things about dealing with Ted and dealing with life. It taught me about perseverance, about paying the price, about respecting my elders. And it also taught me that Ted was kind of like Frank Sinatra. He did it his way. I sense that Ted's spirit is listening now, and he would get a big kick out of me retelling the John Ferguson story. So I'll just bore you with the short version, the 1 minute, the no-huddle offense. I won a trip for two on CFCF radio. Dick Irvin, who's in the crowd, had called out my name for a Boulevard Watch contest. And part of the you want to watch and you want a trip to see the Habs. So I went up to Winnipeg where Fergie was serving as the general manager of the Jets. And I called Ted Schaub before I left just to tell him that I would arrange for Fergie to call him. When I got to Winnipeg, I'll have him call after the game. And to make a long story short, the Jets scored in the last minute what appeared to be the winning goal. It was a tie game going into that goal. The goal was disallowed on a questionable call, and the Habs came back in the last 30 seconds and won the game. Well, Fergie went nuts in the press box. He threw a temper tantrum. He threw newspapers on the ice. He upset tables up in the press box, knocked over ashtrays, and then he went to the dressing room area, and he continued his rage. He was yelling. He was picking up weights in the weight room and tossing against the wall. He threw chairs. And I'm sitting there waiting outside the room, wondering if I should actually go in and see Ferguson at this point. And I think I was more nervous in front of him than I was the first time I called Ted Schaub. I was wearing a Habs jersey, which made it worse because I was walking into the Winnipeg dressing room, shaking like a leaf. But I gathered enough courage to approach Fergie in the Jets locker room. Somehow I got past. There was no security back then in those days. My game plan was just to mention Ted Teeb's name really quickly so that Fergie would calm down a bit perhaps and not think of throwing me out of there. So I quickly said, "Mr. Ferguson, Ted Teeb sent me from Montreal and asked me if you could call his show, Collect, if you can spare a few minutes." Well, all of a sudden, Fergie's demeanor changed. The minute I mentioned Ted's name, his rage dissipated, a smile came over his face, and he said, "Teddy, eh? How's he doing? What's the number?" So he called the show, not Collect, on his own dime, on the spot, and the interview went on for about 10 minutes, and as it was winding down, I wanted to grab the phone and say, "Hey, Ted, I came through on my promise." So I put out my hand for the phone, and Ferguson thought I was putting out my hand to shake hands with him. So he shook hands with me, and my hand was limp, I tell you. He almost crushed my hand. And I said, "Actually, Mr. Ferguson, I was reaching for the phone. I wanted to speak to Ted briefly." Fergie replied, "Too late. He's already cut me off." Ted was known to cut off a lot of people over his lengthy on-air career. He was famous for using a machine gun on his callers, but as he always said, they're only firing chocolate bullets. Strangely enough, I only really got to know Ted well on a personal level only over the last decade. He's been around for 40-odd years here, and I only really got to know him well in the last 10 years. We bumped into each other a few times at Olympic Stadium, which he christened the Big O. He was the first to call it that. We also crossed paths a number of times when I began an 8-year radio career with my radio partner, Storm and Norman, who's somewhere here today. Ted took a liking to me. I'm not sure why. But he started calling me every few weeks, at least once a month, if not more often than that, to discuss radio in Montreal, the radio scene, life in general, other issues, family issues. And I looked forward to his calls, even though they were usually after midnight. Ted was a nighthawk, like me, actually. On the air, he helped organize a rescue mission for a stranded cat on a hydro pole, and he played a role in stopping a couple of attempted suicides. He organized a charity baseball game between prisoners from a penal institution and a Montreal junior team at Jarry Park, which marked the first time in Canadian penal history that convicts had been let out of a prison to play in a sporting event. Ted had a warm heart and a charming off-air persona that few of his listeners ever saw. His show taught us about the inside pitch, which was a piece that actually his wife Ellie started doing on his show back in the early days. He taught us about racism in sports. He taught us humility. He taught us about the importance of education, about giving the downtrodden guy a break, and that convicts were people too. He was a true mensch, an honorable, decent person, and rarely got the respect that he really deserved from the media. But Ted is perhaps best remembered for the term, "You're gone." Well, Ted's gone now, but he won't be forgotten. He was a straight arrow, and he's finally run out of racetrack. God rest you, merry gentlemen. May his family find comfort and the great affection extended for him at this sad time.